when I came out and said this, all these came out and started taunting me. So I went through and I picked and I said, you're the guy. And I told my people, I want this guy. And guess what? We got him. We're watching his house. We're listening to his phone conversations. If he puts it up on Saturday, we got him. If he pops this link up on Saturday, we got him. And we will arrest him and I will prosecute. I will not be nice. I will not give him any leniency whatsoever. I will go guns a blazing. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, a show where the news of the day is usually given just enough time, but sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by, we thank you. And get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin. I'm joined by the God, Father of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. Craig, how are you?
John, I'm well. Listen, I took my style from 1970s French Canada. No word of a lie. I walked out to the swamp behind my house because we're just like Shrek. I hopped on the ice, played a little bit of shinny. I'm still wearing my long johns. I'm still wearing my turtleneck, but I'm ready to rock, John. I'm excited. It's cold up here. It's exciting.
It is not cold here at all. I'm in shorts and a t-shirt.
13 below here.
We're ready to go. All right, Craig. On this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk Karen Till, Dana and the Neverland Pirates, and the passing of the polar bear. But we begin with Conor McGregor. Craig, it's Conor fight week. And as always, there are a lot of things swirling around a Conor fight. There's the potential of a Khabib Nurmagomedov rematch. There's talk of an increased schedule in 2021. There's, of course, his opponent, Dustin Poirier. And there are the assault allegations. Craig, we saw this happen with Cowboy Cerrone. And in the end, it didn't matter. But is Dustin Poirier an afterthought this week? And could that be a mistake on Conor McGregor's part?
Is it Conor McGregor's fault that all of the press is just kind of gravitating towards him? No. It's a little weird, you know, how it's so McGregor-centered, but this is usually the trick. And like you said, I mean, it was this way when he fought Cowboy Cerrone, to the fact that, and we kind of talked about it in our prediction videos, it's like everybody kind of forgot that fight. They're more or less focusing on the fact that Conor wasn't prepared for the Khabib fight, making excuses for him, showing him drinking at the press conference. And we talked about this last week on Early Stoppage as well. He's coming into this Dustin Poirier fight and he looks good. He looks in shape. He looks ready, saying all the right things. And then this week, as an extension of a Conor McGregor fight week, we just get to hear a little bit more from him. So for me, not necessarily a mistake on Conor's part. It would be more a mistake maybe on a promotional standpoint that you don't promote both guys evenly. But again, we're talking about the biggest star in the sport and a fan favorite and a hardcore fan's favorite at that. And listen, I see the comments swirling about in our comment section there this week. There's a lot of people upset at Matt Allen for using the word casual, throwing it around a couple of times on the show. I, of course, did not. And listen, I get it. I mean, he's a Poirier guy. He's going to ride or die with this guy. But yeah, to really answer the question, bring a full circle, increased schedule. He said the same thing last year. We didn't have fans in attendance. Now we get a Conor fight. How many fans are going to be in attendance, John? 2,000, like a drop in the bucket. So cool. Hopefully we get two or three fights out of McGregor. I'll take him at it. I'd love to see it. But it's not really his fault in this one.
Yeah, I don't think it's his fault either. You know, so you and I are very big fans of the GSP, Carlos Condit, Primetime, and then I've kind of got into the YouTube wormhole and found the GSP, Johnny Hendricks, Primetime with the Phil Collins. So here's what I took from that, which I'll talk about with Conor. One thing Firas Sahabi said was, at the beginning of a training camp, it's 99% physical, and it is 1% mental, and the closer you get to the fight, it shifts. I think Conor understands a big fight week more than anybody does. I think that you could make an argument, yeah, did he take his eye off the prize against Khabib? Potentially. Or you could say the fight would have went the exact same way had Conor done everything right. So I think that – I don't think that Dustin Poirier is an afterthought. I do think he has Dustin Poirier – he thinks he has Dustin Poirier's number. And that affects the way that he's, dealing with him and the mind games and the skullduggery that he wants to play. They faced off, and Conor said to Dustin, you know what it is in there, and I know what it is in there. I think that he's trying to get in Poirier's kitchen a little bit, but I don't think that he has his eye off the prize any more than he ever does.
I've got one question for you before we move too far on. And I know it's something that's going to come up during the show, but we didn't really have it written down. If Conor McGregor is able to beat Dustin Poirier, you know, Habib might be lurking, but let's just throw him aside because we'll talk about him. Who do you think Conor McGregor would take a fight against if he wants to fight two or three times a year?
That's a tough one because he seems to want to go against he just throws out so many names. You know, the winner of the co-main event makes a lot of sense. You know, Justin Gaethje makes a lot of sense. There's guys.
Diego Sanchez?
Diego Sanchez makes very little sense, but they seem to want that fight. I don't know. I mean, this is where I think it gets complicated, where Conor says he wants a full schedule. Dana says he wants a full schedule, but they can never seem to agree on who the guy is. Does he just stick to a weight class and go through the opponents that he normally should, which I think would be Dana's preference? Or, well, maybe it wouldn't be. Or does he start calling Jorge Masvidal's name? Does he wait to see who wins Gilbert Burns and Kamaru Usman? Does he call their name? You know, I think that Conor's a guy with so many options that it's hard to kind of nail him down to one fight. It's kind of how he's feeling when he's ready to fight. Who does he want to fight then? Because these fights sort of come together quickly.
I'm thinking Masvidal Diaz, but you never know. And we started to allude to it, or I did, John. But as far as announcements, the decision 2.0 became almost an afterthought when the clock struck 3 p.m. Eastern, like the UFC's official press announcement said it was going to happen. And a bit later on in the show, Dana White came out to announce vaguely that it would be possible that the child that fought the bear once in a viral video could possibly return to fight one of the foursome of this weekend's fighters, or Charles Oliveira. John, I was intentionally vague as possible with the details there to try and mimic Dana's big announcement. So what's your take here? Was this just a publicity stunt because we're on ABC, or did it have legs whatsoever?
You know, we'll get to this when we get into the piracy stuff. And we've talked about this a little bit in the past weeks. But I think Dana, more than ever, is starting to really understand situational ethics and what needs to be said and when it needs to be said. And I think that he's really honed in on, all I need is Khabib to give me this weekend. And whatever I have to do to facilitate that, I'm willing to do. If that means I got to throw some shine to Eagle Fighting Championships, then so be it. If all I got to do is get this kid to keep his mouth shut long enough to get people to tune in, and we'll get to in the flurry how many people tuned in, and if it was effective, you know, I think that that's his play. Nowadays, what do I need to say? What is the shelf life on what I say? How long does it need to be true for, or how long does it need to be at least wondered about, or how long do people need to be curious about it for to fulfill the thing that I need to fulfill the reason that I said it in the first place? I think he's really getting honed in on that. Now, that's either a good thing or a bad thing, depending on how you look at it. I think that's what this was. This was him saying, Khabib, I'm not asking you to tell me who you want to fight. Just keep your mouth shut for a couple hours.
But then he didn't. And that's the trouble. Like, then he came out and said, well, I don't really have any intentions of fighting. Like, that's the issue here. So you make this big address that there's going to be an announcement. There's a tweet where they're walking into what looks like a classroom in a new school or a portable. They close the door. Oh, there's going to be a big announcement. Then all of a sudden in my inbox, I get an email on ABC. There will be an announcement 3 p.m. Eastern. Then all of Twitter is freaking out at 3:01 when we don't have Dana White popping up on the broadcast. And we have to wait till after another fight. Then we get Dana White out there. And again, he was as vague as possible. He threw out just about every name in the top five, Charles Oliveira. And we're going to get into it in the flurry. But, you know, a lot of people are excited about the possibility of a Charles Oliveira fight. Now, I would say he probably doesn't have the hardest strength of schedule as some of these last fighters, but the Kevin Lee wins a big one. The Tony Ferguson wins a big one and it presents a new challenge. So to me, I don't think the announcement really had any legs other than it being a bit of a ratings ploy. And did it work? Did it not work? I don't know. But to me, it just kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. Like this ultra fiesta monster energy, zero sugar. It's awful. It tastes bad.
Is that an anti-advertisement?
Yeah, it is. I mean, listen, I'm always game to listen to advertisers. We get a neat one for this weekend, but Monster Energy just doesn't cut it. I'm a Guru guy. That's a Canadian brand. It's good stuff.
You know, I think I'll say the last thing I'll say on the Khabib thing is that, you know, the Oliveira matchup is interesting. And listen, I don't want to sit here and call Dana the devil. but I'll just put it. I'll put it in these terms. Khabib's at the point now in his career where if he's going to make a deal, he's going to make a deal with the devil because he's already kind of said what he's going to do and what he wants to do. Anything else is the opening of a briefcase, right? Anything else is this is what I'll give you to do what I need you to do because he doesn't want to fight Conor and he doesn't feel like there's any more challenges at 155 and his mom doesn't want him to fight. Yeah. So anything else, anything that he does from here on out is not, except for GSP, is not a legacy play. It's an envelope.
GSP played a villain in a Steven Seagal movie. Who's to say GSP wouldn't take that paycheck over to GFC and fight Khabib? Who knows?
Who knows? Craig, let's talk Max Holloway. Holloway put on a performance for the ages, and that's coming from a guy who typically puts on performances for the ages. He broke striking records and have people entertaining the idea of a third fight with Alexander Volkanovski. Max himself has said, listen, I'm not interested in chasing a guy for a fight, which kind of flies in the face of everything else he's done in the week leading up to this last fight. But I guess the question here, Craig, is does this performance say more about Max Holloway or Calvin Kattar? And extending the question, should this performance bring Volkanovski back to the table?
Isn't that the funny thing? I mean, that's a tweet that I sent out. And it you talk about things getting legs. That was the one that kind of got not as many legs as I had hoped. It wasn't a millipede. It was more like a centipede or a spider, I guess. It didn't really get the shine that I thought it would. And I think it speaks more to the game planning of Alexander Volkanovski, the, you know, different things that he's able to throw at an opponent like Max Holloway, because you saw it from Calvin Kattar. At a certain point, his game plan didn't work. He looked frustrated. He was looking for the power shots. And honestly, and I know we have a great recap up between the one and only John Franklin and that guy, Matt Allen, that other guy. But you looked at it from a point of, from what, the end of the third round in the early beginnings of the fourth is, why are they sending Calvin Kattar back out there? I don't think that speaks to Calvin Kattar, the fighter. Again, the fight against Zabit, we really saw the heart that he was able to bring into a fight where he's starting to come back in the very latest, the stages in that one. You saw him beat Dan Ige in a great main event. I mean, the guy is definitely a top tier fighter, but as Beast in 25-8 always says, there's levels, and he couldn't crack that upper level of the Holloways, the Volkanovskis of the world. So to me, it showed really Max hasn't missed the step. If anything, he's been able to gain. He can really switch things up. I'm sure he won a lot of fans over. And it's not just regular fans. It's that Goat Talk fan. It's that, you know, greatest 145 of all time fan. When you're starting to point, yell at the commentary, bring that into, you know, perspective. So to me, Max Holloway gains. Calvin Kattar, to me, doesn't lose a whole lot. And I really think Volkanovski shines out of all of this. But for Volkanovski, he's going to have to beat Ortega and then beat Holloway a third time for him to really win just about everybody over.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you're Calvin Kattar, you do exactly what you've done and just say, listen, Max is a hell of a fighter. You continue to pump his tires because in doing so, it makes you look a little bit better. You know, all these guys that have lost to Conor, as he made his ascension, it's raised them as well. Like, you know, look at Max. He went
Look at Joe Duffy.
He went the distance with Conor, and that's kind of added to his legacy. I think for me, and there's one thing I want to address before we get moving on the rest of this conversation and what's next for Max, but I do want to talk about friend of the show, Brendan Schaub, because I never miss an opportunity to take a shot at him, and here's the one this week. All this business about Calvin Kattar's from Boston, and that's why they didn't throw in the towel, and all those guys are from Boston, and they're tough, and they don't even bring towels from Boston and all that shit. Listen, it's not about how tough you are. You're tough when you walk into the cage. Okay, getting the shit beat out of you and nobody doing anything about it doesn't make you tough. It means that you are all right, this is a little unfair, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. Maybe if a few people had stepped in for Brendan Schaub when he was fighting, below the belt would be a little more coherent. I can understand what the hell this guy was saying, and he wouldn't spend half his show on Borachina Depot on Twitter. Like, come on, man. There's a safety element to this. It's not how tough Calvin Kattar is. He's already tough. His toughness is not in question. Getting beat up for five rounds doesn't make him any less tough or more tough to me, whether the towel gets thrown in or not. Well, hold on. One more thing. In the history of fighting, no one has ever thrown in a towel and someone say, oh, that guy's not tough. Please. That's not the reaction to a towel getting thrown in.
why do we see it more in boxing than we do in MMA? Because the only time I can really think of it recently where a corner gave up on a guy or a corner let a guy give up, and it wasn't really the corner as much as it was the referee, was the Max Roscoff fight. Like, that was the last time I can think of a corner going, okay, that's enough. That fight and Sam Hughes' fight, I guess, against Tisha Torres. Those are the only two. And for Max Roscoff, he won the first round, got beat pillar to post in the second round. For Sam Hughes, her iris was full of blood. And a doctor had said after the fight, I've never seen an injury this bad in a fight. Like, she should be glad she has a coach like this.
Well, okay. So in answer to your question, I'd say two things. One, the sport and by extension, the coaches are younger in MMA than boxing. Two, and this is not going to be a popular statement, but I don't want to say boxing people are smarter than MMA people, because that's a push, because there's, you have more skills that are needed for MMA. So obviously you have to have a more diverse mind to understand a lot of different things. I just think in boxing they have more of a sense when the fight's over than they do in MMA. Sometimes they'll let fights go on longer than they should for God knows why. But I think that the corner, even the fighters themselves, there's a history of throwing in the towel. You know, there's a history of not leaving your stool. There's maybe it's a precedent thing. Maybe there's enough precedent of the towel being thrown in that's not looked down as much as maybe it would be in MMA. Although I'll remind everybody, we're going to talk about a fighter, an OG later, who passed away this week. You know, Royce Gracie's corner has thrown in the towel. They threw in the towel against Sakuraba. He didn't really answer the bell after he fought Chemo. So, I mean, it's not like there's no precedent for this. There's some precedent for it. It's just that people want to tie their masculinity and their toughness to whether or not a towel gets thrown in. I don't agree with that. Anyway, let's move forward to Max. I would say that let me ask you this question about Max Holloway. Do you think he's a poster fighter? I mean, he's a young guy, and he can still go after the belt. So if you had a choice between Max only fighting big names who are at or near the end of their career, Jose Aldo, the like, guys like that, not him, but that like that, or going to 55, what would you prefer?
I mean, that was his eighth main event in a row. They before the pandemic, he only really fought in two places, right? Toronto and Vegas, and wasn't the Pettis fight in Detroit? Somebody will hit us up in the comments and let us know. I think it was in Detroit. I think. Anyway, he's a Toronto guy. He's a Vegas guy. So he's a draw, and you can't deny that. I mean, the UFC comes to Toronto, what, once, twice a year? And they usually put on a stack card for the Canadian fans. And he's a huge draw in Canada. So, you know, I can speak to that for sure, having that firsthand experience. To me, he's a poster guy. Due in part to, again, eight main events, huge draw in Vegas and in Canada. I would have to look at the pay-per-view numbers to really back up the argument to be 100% sure with it. But, you know, for his career, like you said, he's still a young enough guy. But you're starting to creep into the fact that you've had so many fights. You're into that kind of Jose category almost. And he's going to be an old guy at what, 33 years old probably in MMA years. And you don't want to see those years start to catch up to him. So, again, you move him up to 55, he's going to fight in the best division. Not to say that 45 isn't good, but 55 is definitely the best at this point, especially with the addition of a fighter that we will be talking about. We just keep cucking everybody with these. We will talk about it, so keep tuning in. But, you know, it's a tricky call for me. I think, you know, 45, you almost get stalled out. How many Volkanovski fights can we have? Like, Luke Thomas will lose his sanity if we have four of them. So I don't know how many you can do there. Maybe you freshen it up, move it to 55. That's a tricky one.
Well, one more thing before we move on. That interests me about this thing is that he started fighting so young. And, yeah, you know, he has to understand that, like, you're not LeBron James in the sense that you can't just start dedicating $1 million a year to your body and get a young superstar and not play back-to-backs or take it easy on back-to-backs. You know, there's a path towards LeBron James playing with his son in the NBA. There's not a path towards, you know, I want there to be a path towards Max Holloway playing with his son. I think that he needs to understand how much money do I need to make next couple of years and be out of this thing by 33, 34, 35. I mean, if he's trying to go in his late 30s, I don't see it.
We'll have to see what happens, John. And let's change gears because I can't contain my excitement for this weekend's co-main event. Honestly, I'm looking forward to it more than the main event. And that's a hot take. And my pick in the co-main event was also a hot take. And we have Mr. City Kickboxing Extra Light. And he's taking on Mr. Bellator. John, my first question before I get into questions, did you watch the Born and Bred video by Bellator on their YouTube page?
No, I didn't.
So they put out a video called Michael Chandler, Born and Bred, and it was just Chandler highlights in Bellator. And it gained a lot of hype. And I'm going to pat myself on the back, give myself a tire pump, whatever you want to call it. I put a comment underneath his Fight Night Picks, and as Bellator, as Chris Weidman's dad, this is still my boy because Bellator's still repping their guy. So we have the number two guy at lightweight. We have the number four guy at lightweight in the main event. Yes, Conor McGregor is number four ranked lightweight in the world, according to the Ultimate Fighting Championship. We have number six taking on an unranked guy in our co-main event. So really, is this Dan Hooker's last chance to crack that elite at 155 pounds? And I'll give you the same question about Chandler. Is this his only shot at cracking the division's elite? And after this, you know, if Chandler loses, yeah, there's going to be competitive fights, but can he ever reach that upper echelon if he doesn't win this fight?
I don't think the stakes are that high in terms of how far they'll fall in this fight. I think the stakes are that high in terms of what's next. I think if either one of these guys gets a finish or the other, that's interesting. That means you could potentially, despite what Dana White says, you're probably not going to set yourself up for a fight with Khabib, so don't get your hopes up. But, you know, you might set yourself up for a fight with Conor if you look really, really good. Probably more likely if you're Dan Hooker than Michael Chandler. I don't think Conor wants to get into Michael Chandler, in my opinion. But you could make the case that Conor does the MMA math between Eddie Alvarez and Michael Chandler and does. What I find interesting here is that the last time a guy came over like this, and I'm sure the fans will correct me, and you'll correct me if I'm missing someone, but was Ben Askren. And yeah. I think that the difference here for me is that Michael Chandler's an action fighter and Ben Askren's not. Even at his best, Ben Askren was – the question was, could Ben Askren do what Ben Askren does well against UFC fighters? Michael Chandler gets in there and mixes it up with everybody. So from that perspective, I'm interested to see this fight. And I think that Chandler – can build a nice little – he can carve out a nice little – you know, had Eddie Alvarez not left and went to one championship, I think even – you know, listen, it's tough after you lose that weight to Conor to stick around and have to go into buildings and have him run that highlight and all that. But, I think there's a place for Chandler. I think he's the kind of fighter the UFC likes. And that doesn't mean he's not going to go in there and get pieced up by a guy like Hooker. But I think that – I don't think either guy falls that far with a loss.
You can hear the arguments from both sides. Obviously, I've heard them more for Dan Hooker than I have for Michael Chandler in the comments. And if you made it this far, I picked Chandler to win the fight. And again, I understand it's not a popular pick, but I like the wrestling. And, you know, Dan Hooker has the straight shots up the middle, the elbows, the knees. It makes for an interesting fight. It's a fight of the night caliber one. You can really sit there. It's the old Fight Night Picks pop and popcorn fight. I'm not going to lay any chunk of change on it. I'm just going to sit back and enjoy it. And listen, Fight Night Picks fans know Craig and Matt, Bellator guys, right? So we're in it for that factor. Dan Hooker's a great fighter. And here's where you can start to poke holes in it. And listen, again, from both sides. But you look at Dan Hooker's wins since 2017. Ross Pearson, Mark Giacchese, Jim Miller, Gilbert Burns, who is very depleted and is, you know, he's getting a title shot at 70 now. I get it. But at 55, it was so-so. Loses to Edson Barboza, one of the most disgusting beatings we've ever seen in a cage. Beats James Vick, who's fighting for ex-MMA. Beats Ally Quinta. Ally Quinta, at this point, I don't know how good he is. I honestly couldn't tell you. Beats Kevin Lee on his best day. He loses to Dan Hooker on his worst. Paul Felder by split. And he wins that one, but you can make an argument that Felder won it, right? So there's all of these different things where it's really tough to tell just how good Dan Hooker is, especially with a win. And then for Chandler, the argument is, well, you look at his wins since he lost his belt to Primus at Bellator NYC. Gyoti Yamauchi, Brandon Gertz, Brent Primus again, gets knocked out by Patricio, beats Sidney Outlaw and Benson Henderson. And Matt made the best argument for this one. It was the fact that those wins are maybe not against the highest of competition. Maybe it's not UFC level competition. And I saw somebody say, well, the UFC wouldn't even sanction Benson Henderson, Dan Hooker. Well, I bet they would. But you look at the fights, it's the way that he finishes those fights. And that's why he deserves a shot like this. John, you brought up a great point. The biggest debuts you could think of with the UFC or the biggest promotional switches. You got Askren, you got Gaethje, you got Eddie Alvarez. And we get some pretty exciting fights out of all those guys. Obviously, Askren was the least popular of the three or the least successful. But I love this fight, and I think, you know, this really does hold a lot of water in terms of the top end of the division. And if you lose it, you might see yourself on the outside looking in. And if you win, you probably have a shot at fighting Charles Oliveira.
All that sounds great. All right, Craig, let's move on. Craig, it's been a hell of a career for Carlos Condit, interim champ in the UFC, undisputed champ in WEC, and a lot of great fights. But the contract has come to an end. So I want to look at this from both sides. The UFC and Carlos Condit, right? This is a marriage. All contracts between fighters and promotions are marriages. Who wants to still stay married? Who's still in this thing? Who's still got the love? And who's lost that love and feeling? Do you think the UFC wants to keep Condit? Do you think Condit wants to stay? What are your thoughts?
You know what's weird? So I saw this question was in our doc, and then I looked up Carlos Condit, and I knew I wouldn't find how much he got paid when he fought his last fight against Matt Brown. But I just started, I typed in Carlos Condit pay. And then the first, you know, four or five articles are Reebok pay. And every single article, and they were from different events, is Carlos Condit gets the most out of Reebok compensation. And I thought, well, that comes out of Reebok's pocket or the UFC's pocket? Because Reebok pays the UFC and then the UFC pays, right? So the UFC is paying Carlos Condit. Again, it's a small amount of money, but it's still an amount of money. And it's always the most on every card he fights. And he's a former WEC champ, and he's a former UFC champ, and he's been around for so many fights, and that dictates higher pay. Carlos Condit is an expensive asset. And listen, that fight against Matt Brown was awesome. Carlos Condit grappler was awesome. I can't tell you how excited I was about it. I'd say Condit wants to stay more than the UFC wants to have him, and that's coming off an exciting co-main event. But I get Carlos Condit only lost to the top guys in the losing streak, but what do you do with Carlos Condit? Do you give him a 15 guy, or do you give him a young up-and-comer like Matt Brown had and Miguel Baez's last time out before Condit? It's so tricky. Like, it's a tough one to answer.
You know, it depends on what you think about Carlos Condit. Matt and I kind of touched on this on the recap show. It depends on what you think of him. And if you think that Carlos Condit deserves to have listen, we've had this conversation 1,000 times. Let's have it 1,001. It's the name versus the game, right? And if you want Carlos Condit, if your point in having Carlos Condit on your roster is to build someone else's name, then you're going to throw him in there with guys like you just mentioned. But if you think that you want Carlos Condit to walk away from this game and get fitted for a Hall of Fame jacket, then you're going to give him opportunities. Now, I don't know anybody that's had a losing streak as long as his, other than BJ Penn, who's got a UFC Hall of Fame jacket. But I think that it's interesting. Now, listen, I will say this is a blind spot for me and a failure on my own, and the guys can blast me in the comments or just tell me in the comments if you want. I don't know what Carlos Condit wants to do long term. So one of the questions I posed either to you or Matt, I get you guys confused, is
come on, Dad.
Is that – I know. You're right. I should know more about what Carlos Condit wants to do post-fight. He's just so locked into fighting that I never hear anything about what he wants to do after fighting. So then the question becomes, and I've had this conversation before, is he going to be a guy, I think it was with Matt, where you just, because we're talking about Matt Brown, is he going to be a guy that just wants to retire as a UFC fighter and go open a gym and that be his revenue stream moving forward? Okay, if that's the case, then you retire after a win, a big win. Does he want to work in the front office with the UFC? Carlos Condit is one of these kind of guys, and this is not taking a shot at him. He's one of those kind of guys that we sort of project intelligence on. I mean, he sounds smart in his interviews, but I don't know that he sounds any smarter than any other fighter. He seems to get this intelligence. I don't know if he would even be interested in a front office job.
What's going on?
Dana White. Dana White. He heard a rumor that I was going to stream. So he's got his people watching my house, flying helicopters over. All right. No, I don't know what Carlos Condit wants to do. So if he wants to just be a coach, listen, there's plenty of room for him at Winklejohn. I'm sure they'll be happy to have him. So I, from that perspective, if it were me, I would like to see him in the PFL. I think that'd be a lot of fun to see him in the PFL. It would sort of get back. I think the play, if you're him, is you go to the PFL and you say you want to get back to your roots, like how you were in the WEC, and then you make a run at the belt. But I don't know. I don't know what he wants to do long term. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, the trouble there is the PFL is full of wrestlers. So, I mean, that's it's all Ali's bread and butter. Now, Matt would love that. I mean, a fight against Rory McDonald. But let's parlay this into some kind of sad news. And I know we're going to touch on it. It's going to be a big theme. But, John, COVID-19 continues to affect everyone. And today the news dropped that Fedor Emelianenko had been hospitalized with the virus. Now, I'm going to read you the post that he put out on Instagram. And he said, thanks to all who are genuinely concerned for my health. I feel fine. I'm going into recovery. I'm grateful to the doctors, medical staff for their care and hard work. And, you know, it's always tricky to see that happen to, you know, really anybody, especially Fedor in terms of, you know, MMA and MMA nostalgia in general. But do you think this is finally a gut check moment to a fan base that's been fairly polarized on the subject to rally around Fedor? And do you think MMA fans are going to kind of change their tune? And not even MMA fans, but probably the most vocal people that you see out there on Twitter.
You know, one thing that I'm learning with the way the world is now, and I can only speak for the United States, right? And sometimes when you live in the United States, you sort of act like there's nothing but the United States, which is unfair. But that's just, that's the nature of being an American, for better or worse. Gee. I think that what I'm seeing nowadays is that everyone who someone either admires or pushes forward or whatever is merely a vessel for their own beliefs and their own aspirations and their own self-identity or whatever, right? So Fedor is important to MMA fans so long as they can self-identify as a Fedor fan and there be something associated with that, right? Perfect example I'll give you. We kind of, you know, dip our toes in politics here and there, but in America, there's the Proud Boys, these white supremacists, you know, who are big fans of Trump. Well, Trump didn't put up a big enough fight for the Proud Boys' liking, so now he's on the outs with them. So what you find out in the process is it was never about Trump. Trump was merely a vessel for them to put forth whatever their agenda was. And I think that's putting a little bit too serious of a – well, this is a serious subject with Fedor, but, you know, just being an MMA fan base, I think that to think that Fedor would open some people's eyes would be to say they would have to separate themselves – from their issues with COVID and whatever inconveniences it gives them and whatever protestations they have to it, to say, you know, this is a guy that I admire. He's sick. And this is bigger than my feelings about this, right? And I think that we live in such a conspiracy theory world now that once you get locked in on something and you don't want to come off it, it doesn't matter what happens. All it is just another, you know, we know a guy who shall remain nameless, who just finds a way to sort of morph the things that he already believes. It doesn't matter what he sees. He's going to give his lean on it based on whatever he already believes, you know, and that's called confirmation bias. And a lot of people have confirmation bias. And I don't think that Fedor, this is a long-winded way of saying, I don't think Fedor is enough to overcome confirmation bias.
Hopefully it helps, you know, some people, you know, I really hope for that because, you know, Fedor Emelianenko to MMA fans, he's that guy that doesn't speak English, but kind of probably does and understands what everybody's saying. And then he sits there and smiles and, you know, everybody can kind of relate to him. It's not a Russian fighter. It's not an American fighter. He's kind of a global star. And when he went to Bellator, yeah, it was a little weird. When he fought with M1 Global, did anybody really pay attention? But he's one of those legends. Like, he's one of those all-time guys. So hopefully, you know, obviously it's unfortunate what happens, and we wish him, obviously, speedy recovery. 1,100 likes or upvotes on this post on Reddit. There's, what, 41 comments. I saw this trending on Twitter all day. So, yeah, hopefully somebody just looks at that and thinks, geez, you know, maybe I shouldn't be so loosey-goosey with the old not wearing a mask or washing my hands or whatever it is. You can argue with me till the cows come home about this subject. I'm not going to dig my heels in. I'm going to follow the rules. And, John, if you want to talk politics, the biggest news in Canada today, Payette stepping down as governor general after blistering report on Rideau Hall work environment. So our top government official here that signs off on everything that's done by the prime minister had to step down because she had a toxic workplace. That's what we have going on up here, John. Back to you.
Wow, people actually step down because of toxic workplaces in Canada? Here you just have to give an apology.
Yeah, our top person, John. Our top person. Yep.
Yeah, Ellen just gives we just have celebrities that do that here, and they just give apologies and move on. All right, Craig, speaking of moving on, let's move on to sparring sessions this week. I want to talk about Dana and these Pirates. Listen, we've talked about it in previous weeks. He's made threats. Yeah. You know, like the one you heard at the top of the show. You mentioned last week about pissing into the Regina, Saskatchewan wind with regards to something else, I think. So I'll ask you on this subject. You think this is a big waste of Dana White's time? Or do you think he's playing high-level chess with these streamers and he's really, you know, he's trying to hit one pin so he can knock down 20?
Did you watch that interview today with BT Sport where he started talking about, like, we've got this guy. We found him in the comments section. We got him. We're following him. We're tapping his phones. We're watching his house. And as soon as he posts that stream, we're going to get him. We're going to have him arrested and convicted and persecuted. And whatever Dana White said, obviously I'm paraphrasing. But what, like, you're a private organization. You don't have that authority. I mean, how does that work? I don't know how that works. Now, that being said, I already bought the pay-per-view because I don't want to have, you know, those issues on Fight Pass. So I already bought the pay-per-view. We're going to have a fight companion. And I'm one of those guys. And obviously, look at my hair, look at my turtleneck, look at my sweater. I'm pretty straight edge. I follow the rules. If people, you know, ask for streams, I'm always on Fight Pass. I'm watching TSN on satellite and I buy the pay-per-views. Why? Because I don't want the laggy streams or the streams that don't work or all the crap that comes with that. And at the end of the day, if a fighter can get paid, a fighter can get paid and whatever. You can make an argument for either side. I really don't care. To me, yeah, it's a little bit of a waste of his time. It's you know, he's trying to flex on these people. They're still going to do whatever they're going to do. I'm not one of those guys, but yeah, it's weird. Like, I don't know if it's high level chess. You can get into that chess and checkers debate like you did that one time. But it's just weird. It's really weird. Like, why would you make this like your big bugaboo that you're going to stick with? Like, it's just odd.
Yeah, I think it's the continuation of the situational ethics. And I think it's the continuation of what each situation calls for. I think he's going a little too, you know, I don't want to say power hungry, man. This whole my people are on it thing is odd. And this whole, like, but I think that he has had, there are things that Dana White does that I don't want to say are outside the law, but, you know, he leans on people and he nudges people. And I'm sure that he has, how do I want to put this? So let's get back into politics for a second. Whenever two candidates run.
No, please.
Hold on. No, but this is the logistics of it, not the opinions of it. Whenever two candidates run, there's something called oppo research, right? The research you do on your opponent. To think that Dana White doesn't have oppo research on people that he needs oppo research on would be short-sighted when it comes to Dana White. So I'm sure that he tasks people that work for him with these kind of projects where, tell me, you know, follow Nate's, you know, Dana likes to be in the know, right? I'm sure he has people that keep him in the know. Can these people run down a streamer? Yeah. Should he be in an interview saying my people are bugging his phones? That I think is a little much. Yeah. I think that's probably unnecessary at best and creepy at worst. So I think that this is a game, you know, like I made a joke, I think last week with you, like he's not Elliot Ness. This isn't Al Capone. Like, let's dial it back.
Well,
just a little bit.
If we're going to focus on Kevin Costner characters, he's a big John Dutton in this case. Big, yeah. John Dutton. Yeah, big time. Apparently, John Franklin doesn't watch Yellowstone. All right, John, let's move into my favorite segment of the show. We're talking over-unders. If you got an idea for an over-under, you want to toss it below in the comments section, you let us know. We're talking UFC 257. I went with a scarce amount here, because I've been really bad with over-unders lately. So let's get into the four that I thought were most appealing this weekend. John, how many Whirly Pops will be consumed during the FNP broadcast, the fight companion of the UFC 257 main card? We're setting the over-under at 6.5. How many can lightweight Matt Allen suck back?
I think that Matt's good for three, and I think you're good for four, so I'm going to take the over.
Four. Or maybe I play it professional and we go with the Ultra Fiesta Monster Energy Zero Sugars. They're terrible.
Just make sure whoever's on the button to cut the feed isn't popping back the whirlies.
Okay, that's fair. All right, so the over-under set at 1.5. How many Conor McGregor, Khabib Nurmagomedov highlights are we going to see?
I'm going to take the under. I don't think we're going to see any at all. I don't think that Dana is... I think Khabib coming out and saying that he has, like, the interview after the fact that recently hit, I think is going to drive that. I don't think he thinks that that's the fight. Okay. Hold on. I think it depends on what you're saying here. Are you saying the highlights of them getting into it or the highlights of the actual fight? I don't think that it serves Conor McGregor or the UFC at all to show highlights of the fight. Maybe some face-off stuff or some jawing back and forth, but not the fight. So I'm going to take the under.
Well, I could have flipped this the other way. I could have said number Dustin Poirier Khabib highlights at 1.5. To me, what the UFC will do, and you'll see this, like right before a fight airs, they do like the 15-second promo pack for each fighter, and then they show like highlights. And there's always a fighter like, I don't know who I could pick. Let's pick Mark Giacchese. They'll show him hitting Fiziev a couple times. Well, he lost that fight to Fiziev, right? So they'll do that, and they do it often. You kind of sit there and scratch your head, but if somebody's never seen that fighter before, hey, that's pretty impressive. So maybe they do it. I'll take the under as well, because again, you could do this on either side, but it's an interesting one nonetheless. Now here's a tricky one, and you're a prelim guy. Finishes on the prelims. There's 12 fights total. Five of them are on the main card. So seven prelim fights. You're taking the over-under at 2.5. How many finishes are we going to get on the prelims this weekend?
I'll take the over only because, and I would love to know the average of this, but I would guess the average is half the number of fights, so the average would be three. But so I think that people get juiced up for Conor fights, and I think fighters know that everyone's watching a Conor fight. Now you can make the argument everybody's watching the main event, but and not the prelims. But I think that Conor brings eyes, and some people are gonna just get the fight, turn it on, you know, have people over and just
have people over.
Casuals are gonna, you know, hey, small bubbles exist, Craig. Small bubbles exist.
Not in New Brunswick, not right now in the red zone. If I'm looking at these prelims, Albazi Zhumagulov, maybe Albazi syncs up a submission. Lentz Evloev, maybe Lentz gets a submission. I mean, Evloev's a huge favorite. Sanchez Muradov, finish. Prakniao, Roundtree, finish. McMahon Pena, maybe. Tavares Carlos Jr., maybe. Zarukian Hakpras, maybe. I've got two. I'll take the over on the chance that one of those maybes turns into a finish, but I love those fights. Again, I'm really excited about this card. You know, obviously it's an A+ because of that main and co-main, but there's a lot of fights to get excited about. So make sure you check them out. If you made it this far, I know you will. John, the amount of mentions of Amanda Hibas's dad's tattoo at 1.5, do you think we're going to get one mention, no mention, or more?
More.
More?
I think that how many mentions of Amanda Hibas's personality are we going to get? I'd set the over-under on six and it blows out the water.
I got to say something, John. Matt loves to talk about that. The first time the broadcast talks about your personality, you know this fighter sucks, right? It's the old John Volante effect. He played football. He's a funny guy. His fighting sucks. It just sucks.
You think Hibas is the exception to that rule?
I do. You know, wonderful personality, great fighter. Max Holloway, they do it too, I guess.
Yeah, there's a few. There's a few in there that their personality outweighs their fighting. All right, I'm gonna get serious for a second on the over-unders. I'm gonna ask you some real, honest to goodness over-unders. All right, here we go. First up, number of knockdowns in the main event. I'm gonna set the over-under on 2.5.
Over. No. Under. I'll take the under. Yep, I'll take the under.
All right. I'll take the that's a tough one. Who do I
Connor hits Dustin, Dustin hits the floor.
You know, here's the thing. Connor doesn't really get it depends on what you want to say about that Khabib one, but Connor doesn't really get knocked down. He's got a pretty good chin.
And Dustin kind of gets rocked, but he doesn't really get knocked down.
I like the under there too. This is one that kind of tells you where you what you're thinking. Co-main event, number of takedowns, over under 5.5.
Oh. I'm going to go under because I think if Chandler can even get one or two and just force himself on top of Dan Hooker, then that's his path to victory. You get one or two in the first, you get one in the second, you get one in the third. I'm up to four and I've got one to burn. I'll take the under. But you know, I still like Chandler in that fight.
You know what no one ever talks about, which is interesting when it comes to number of takedowns in a fight? No one ever talks about the odds that the person getting taken down gets back up, which opens the door for more takedowns. So what I guess what I'm saying here is that it seems like you're contending that if Chandler gets him down, he stays down. As opposed to Chandler gets him down, he gets up. Chandler gets him down again, he gets up. You know, a lot of the, you know, when you see guys like Blades taking these guys down all these number of times, it's like, yeah, but you didn't keep them there. So that's part of it. So, all right. Next up, number of cuts in the co-main and main. I'm going to set the over-under at 3.5.
Over, because Dan Hooker gets cut and Dustin Poirier gets cut.
Connor's been known to get cut too. Connor, you can get to Connor's face.
Yeah, and Chandler can get cut too. I know they did that picture. I don't know if you saw this on Twitter where they had Dan Hooker and Michael Chandler and they do that thing where they turn the lights off and then they get right in their face and they're super bright. And yeah. Dan Hooker had a little bit of a black eye cut. I know you're not supposed to be able to fight if you got a cut on your face. So either it was an old picture or it's just like not a blood blister, but like a bruise. So I don't know. Like Hooker gets cut though, and so does Poirier. Like you said, McGregor does too. I'll take the over.
Over under number of children your wife would want to have if she saw Conor McGregor and his son signing posters together at media day.
It's all dogs. Zero.
No. All right, Craig. Let's move on to For the Gram. Let's talk about your boy Darren Till. I'm going to give you quotes. And we can process these quotes however we process them. Okay. Darren Till, in speaking with some officers in the UK about a mask, said, "What am I out of my local garage getting water? And he's coming out asking me about a mask." And I said, "Mate, I've got no proof right now. So let me be on my way here." The officer tried to talk to Till, "Go away now. You're a Muppet. Get out of my face. Look how you've got me speaking." Then he kind of chilled out a little bit and said, "Even though in my mind I was in the right, I lost my temper with that officer because he was searching and fishing for something. He's obstructing me, obstructing my night. He was just clutching his straws. He had nothing because I was doing nothing." Now, Twitter has taken Craig to calling Darren Till Karen Till, which I like. It's a nice play on words there.
It's funny.
It is funny. Do you think this gives us a glimpse into some Mike Perry dysfunction that may exist in Darren Till's world? Or was this just him having a bad day, not trying to be told what's what, and he just shouldn't have turned his Instagram live on, and that's that?
I think Darren Till allegedly going full Muay Thai on that guy outside that bar was a little bit of dysfunction. If it was him, whoever that guy was kicking that guy, that was bad. I think Darren Till allegedly getting in trouble in the Canary Islands, that was bad. I think he was just having a bad day in this instance. You know, you try to put yourself in these people's shoes. We've all done dumb stuff, but then you see this and you're like, well, I wouldn't do that. But he was having a bad day. I don't know. I hope he was. But stuff like this just grinds your gears, does it not?
Yeah, I agree. I think that he was probably having a bad day. But listen, the definition of a loose cannon is someone that you don't quite know what you're going to get from, you know? And when I was younger, you could ask around. I was a little bit of a loose cannon. We'd go out, have a few drinks, and I'd get crazy. So that's fun for a couple hours, and then it's not fun. So I think that, you know, we like Darren Till's personality in certain instances, and then other times you got to understand, it's a package deal. It all comes with it. You get the silly guy that's doing memes.
he's also this guy that's going to go tell, you know, tell Cop to go fuck himself. So that's the way it goes. All right, Craig, let's move on to one Twitter hitter. Let's talk about this Michael Chiesa. He had a win last night over Neil Magny. Scorecard read 49-46, 49-46, 49-46, 49-46 is all around. So after it, he said to Colby Covington, the election is over. Your shtick is done. I want you next, boy, which I think was a play on what DC had said to John Jones since DC was interviewing him. So let's keep this simple. Do you like this fight? And do you think Chiesa has any chance of getting it?
Or was it Yoel Romero's thing about Michael Bisping?
See you soon, boy.
Probably that. Are we going to get Covington and Masvidal to coach tough? Are we going to get tough? Are we going to get weak? Like, what are we getting on that respect? So for Chiesa, there's fights to make, but like, he's what? He was ranked 8th in the division. He's still ranked 8th today. We have Maya, Woodley, Thompson, Masvidal, Edwards, Burns, Covington. Thompson doesn't have a fight. Make that fight. That's the fight for me. Striker, grappler, make it. Thompson wants to fight forward because he beat Jeff Neal. That's fair, but I don't know. I Covington, Chiesa. What's it going to be? Colby Covington makes fun of him. Michael Chiesa has fun for the first 5 seconds, and then it's don't talk about my mom.
You know, we talk about the push and the mandate, right? The mandate from the fans, the push from the promotion. I think that if you have guys that you're pushing for a little bit of time and you're not getting from them what you want, maybe it's time to push some other people. And all due respect to Stephen Thompson, and I'm not saying this is against making that fight, but how long are we going to give Thompson, you know, the approval of the UFC and put him in advertisements and in khakis? And, you know, I mean, let's try another guy. Let's put Michael Chiesa out there. Put the weight of
whoa. Are you telling me you're not buying Van Heusen khakis at your local Macy's because Stephen Thompson's on them? Is that a kicker?
Craig, I'm in my 40s. I was buying Van Heusen khakis before Stephen Thompson tried to kick TJ Dillashaw. So I was way ahead of that game. No, I just think we give Chiesa a shot, see if he can has a little more to offer than don't talk about my mom. And I just think it's time to, you know, I just think you move the pieces around and you try a different guy in a different place. Now, granted, in fairness to the UFC, the kid's on the desk, right? So it's not like they're not putting him out there. But I think that you got to figure out a different way to market him. You got to give him the glow up, if you will. You got to let him.
I hate that word. I hate that saying. I hate it so much.
You got to give him you got to go to the folks in the editing room and say, why don't you give this kid the hero's cut? You know, give me the best you can with Michael Chiesa. Make him look
like I'm like a mountain man on scale, half cut. Yeah. Like, what?
Give me the hero's highlight. All right, Craig, let's move on to posting to the book. A melancholy posting to the book this week. Rest in peace to Paul Varlins. My estimation of Paul Varlins, he was sort of Tim Sylvia before Tim Sylvia. He wasn't a championship caliber fighter, but he was this guy who was a big guy. I think he went about 6'8". He was from Alaska. He had the gimmick. If you want to have fun, go read what Jonathan Snowden wrote about Paul Varlins in MMA Encyclopedia. It's hardly – I would do it here, but we're running a little long. It's hardly a glowing portrayal of Varlins' career. And has a nice Missy Hyatt story. It's a good read. I'll put it on the Patreon. But listen, he was a freak of nature. He's an OG. He wasn't a Hall of Famer. He's more known – for what Marco Huas did to him than what he did to anybody else. You're a lot younger than I am. When you hear the name Paul Varlins, does it mean anything to you? Did he transcend his era?
His first fight was 2 weeks before my first birthday. his first pro fight. He fought on July.
No, Craig, that's one of them.
He fought on July 14th, 1995. He lost to Tank Abbott, who was then undefeated, make his pro debut, and he fought Cal Warstrom, and he beat him. And my birthday
I had a high school diploma when that
My birthday is July 30th, 1994. Don't steal my identity, I guess. but I look at his record, lost to Tank Abbott, lost to Marco Huas, lost to Dan Severn, lost to Vovchanchin, lost to Chemo, lost to Mark Kerr, and then he lost to some other people, Nick Nutter. I don't have enough to speak on him other than the fact that he fought in some pretty pivotal UFC events pretty early on. And I know there's a lot of reverence held, and that name holds a lot of water with a lot of UFC fans. Obviously, it was way before my time. And when I look at the early UFCs, I'm into them because of what? Harold Clarence Howard. You know, we have a saying up here in Canada, if you're coming on, come on. And, you know, some of the bigger names. But again, Paul meant a lot to a lot of people. And obviously, it's a shame to see somebody go like that. So, again, kind of feeds into the whole Fedor thing. You see Fedor, he's hospitalized. You see Abdulmanap Nurmagomedov, if he passes away due to COVID complications, you see it happen to Paul Varlins. You got to kind of start to open your eyes. And it's a real shame. And, you know, I've seen a lot of an outpouring of, I guess, grief on Twitter, Facebook. I saw even Jonathan Snowden posted about this one. And it was definitely disappointing to see it pop up on social media for sure.
You know, it's interesting because, and this is just a thought of mine, and there could be nothing here, but when you read those names, it's almost like, you know, sometimes I'll see guys that fight a lot of Hall of Famers or do all this, and I look at their resume and I go, man, this guy's got a hell of a book in him. And, you know, Sean Alshadi, who's a friend of the show, he wrote this article, or he's written a couple of them for MMA Fighting, which was like the night we fought Anderson or the night we fought Jose Aldo, where he talks to all the fighters that fought those particular fighters. It's almost like you could flip it, and it'd be interesting to read a book written by a guy who fought all those guys and lost. And maybe each chapter is
like
the night I fought Mark Kerr, the night I fought. That'd be an interesting book. Now, obviously, he's passed, and that no longer exists, but it's just interesting to have that you be a common thread between all those guys. And the story never gets told. You know what I mean?
I mean, to me, the one person that I would love to hear from, I'd love to have an interview with this guy, but you got to be particular about the way you do it. It's not like, oh, you're a punching bag and you lost and you're terrible. But Tarion Ware, and I pick on him a lot in the shows, and I say, like, look up that guy's record. Look up that guy's record. He won 1, 2, 3, 4 in a row, went to the UFC in 2017. Lost the decision to Cody Stamann, lost the decision to Sean O'Malley, lost the decision to Tom Dukinwa, lost the decision to Merab Dvoishvili, leaves the UFC and loses 2 split decisions. This guy fought a ranked fighter, a guy who's would you call him a superstar? He's transcended MMA, Sean O'Malley has.
Yeah.
A great fighter in Tom Dukinwa that I wish he was still around, but he's a male model. He made that choice. And a ranked fighter in Merab Dvoishvili. Like Tarion Ware, the stories this guy would have. But you just got to be really particular about how you'd approach it.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's move on to the flurry. Craig, what do we miss? What is kind of sticking out there that we didn't touch in the middle of the bulk of the show?
The weird article that I saw, and again, paraphrasing, but the headline from Bloody Elbow was like, Khabib Nurmagomedov training partner says Charles Oliveira's most intriguing opponent for Khabib. And then it turns out I click on the article and it sends me to Josh Thompson's podcast, Big John. And Josh Thompson is that training partner. He's just kind of commenting on it. But I do think that Charles Oliveira, I mean, again, it's that new blood type of conversation. That'd be a fun fight. We will never see it happen. Snowball's chance in hell, but it'd be a fun fight, right?
Well, that's clickbait if I ever heard it, because obviously he's saying it on his podcast as a podcaster, not as a training partner. Not, you know, sometimes when they say training partner, it's like, well, this guy's got some insight into what the guy's thinking, but I'm with him. And then I think it'd be an intriguing fight, but, yeah, I would be interested to see that fight.
UFC on ABC did 1.2 million viewers on Saturday afternoon. Now, underwhelming, overwhelming, and do we have to consider what else was on TV at the time?
It is underwhelming, but yeah, I do think we need to consider what else was on TV. But this was meant to be counter-programming, wasn't it? Like the UFC did this to counter-program, what was it, the NFL? So, yeah, I mean, you got to take that into account. But I do think that, you know, there are certain things that are just staples in at least America in terms of what we're going to watch. So to go against those things, you might take a little bit from them, and maybe they think 1.2 million against football is a victory. But to me, there was maybe a better way to do it.
I'd like to see the numbers from yesterday morning. I mean, you're going up against the inauguration. And then in Canada, your main card's only available on Fight Pass. Because TSN didn't have the rights. What the hell was that? Like, that was just, again, I didn't get a chance to watch it live. I had to watch it after the fact. So it was disappointing. Killashaw suspension's over. How exciting is that?
Listen, I gotta admit, I mean, I gotta admit, I'm not crazy about the fact the kid was suspended. I there's real vibes coming from TJ Dillashaw that this has been going on for a long time. There's real big vibes from Cody Garbrandt. This has been going on for a long time. But I gotta admit, man, skill set wise, I like him. I like watching him fight. I enjoy when he's in there. He's got a big enough name that a lot of things start to open up in terms of matchups. I'm excited that he's back. I hope that he's moved on from his issues.
Yeah, he's one of those guys, like, you get up in the morning for those fights. So I enjoy them. Hopefully, yeah, like you said, hopefully everything's behind him in that regard and we can get a good fight. Every single fighter in the last two UFC events, the Saturday event, the Wednesday event, everybody made weight. Was that a surprise for you?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise, but I do think it speaks to, it could just be a coincidence, but I do think it speaks to that, you know, people sit up a little bit straighter during a Conor fight week, you know? So I think they know the eyes are on them. No one wants to, I think people are probably starting to get it that Dana's not having it and it's getting old and, you know, maybe.
Whoa. So you can lose three fights by first round finish and still get a fight. But if you miss weight, like that's the kicker. Marcin Prachniau, Vinicius Moheia, they keep carting these guys out here. What do you make of Sarah McMahon on a 15-hour flight and embedded getting up out of her seat and like doing like push-ups and sit-ups and stuff? Does that really help an athlete? I need your expert opinion on that one. I thought it was kind of silly.
I think any activity is better than sitting on your ass on an airplane. So yeah, I would say it helps, but you know, it's the old thing of, we mentioned Kevin Costner earlier. Let's mention Bull Durham again. In terms of whatever reason you think that you have a winning streak is the reason why you have a winning streak. So if it means something to Sarah McMahon, then it serves a purpose.
Elbow queen, that one win streak. Miocic Ngannou, 2's official. Level of excitement out of 10. Where are you at here?
Out of 10, because I think that Ngannou lost the first one, so that makes it interesting. I think Miocic is really looking like he wants to cement his legacy as the best heavyweight of all time, if he hasn't already, but he really wants to cement that legacy. And our friend John Jones is hanging out there. And both these guys know that the fight with John Jones is going to be a massive, massive fight. And the winner of that, where it gets interesting is if Ngannou wins, do they go straight to Jones or do they give Miocic the run back? But yeah, there's a lot on the line for this one. So I'm super excited about it. And to be quite honest, I do think Ngannou is a different fighter than he was the first time. And I think it's a much more interesting fight.
You could have cut the tension in that arena with a knife. That was so much fun being there. Like, I was nervous. The last two I have, Ryan Hall, Dan Ige, official for March 13th, and Cody Garbrandt called out Jose Aldo. What's a bigger deal? Garbrandt, Aldo? Probably that one. Or Ryan Hall finally getting a fight?
Yeah. Man. You know, we really talked a little bit. Yeah, you did. We talked about it on a recap show about Ryan Hall's kind of the boogeyman. Little bit, you know, there's these guys. Tony Ferguson was it for a while. Joanna was it. These people that no one wants to fight. I think that Danny Ige doesn't care about any of that. He's looking to fight, and I think that Ige has plans post career that have nothing to do. Like, I don't know that he's. I think his legacy will be what he does after he fights, not what he does during his fight. But he's a game fighter, and he's going to come in there, and I think give Ryan Hall some interesting looks. Now, will Ryan Hall be able to combat that? We'll see, but obviously Garbrandt, Aldo's a bigger fight, more interesting and all that. But I think it's nice to see someone kind of accept the challenge and go after the boogeyman.
I'm excited about it. And then the Garbrandt, Aldo thing, make the fight. But yeah, to me, it's like, okay, you call out Aldo. So 125, you're totally out of it. You don't want to fight Francisco Figueroa, right?
Yeah, absolutely right. All right, Craig, let's move on to start the conversation. Let's give shots to MMA Reddit. This is a little bit of a reach, but I just want to open it. We start the conversation here. So I kind of want to do a state of the UFC presidency in the sense that, listen, we talked about Dana with this piracy business. He sounded like a lunatic. So if you weigh that against how he handled the pandemic, which by all accounts – post, obviously not pre, but by all accounts after the fact, was a home run. I mean, he handled it as good as you can handle it. What do you think the state of the UFC's relationship with Dana is? Do you think he gets to leave when he wants to leave? Do you think he still needs to walk the, you know, the straight and narrow? Because every once in a while I see him flexing and I see him feeling himself, and it seems like he feels very secure in his place in the company, whereas when it was first sold, he didn't feel that way. So where do you think the UFC is at with Dana White?
It's a good question. I kind of held back one thing when we talked about the whole piracy thing, and it's the fact that Dana White's making ABC and Disney a whack of money. I mean, they led the charge with ESPN Plus. They boosted subscriptions after our guy Killashaw fought Henry Cejudo, and it was just a snowball effect after that. So there's 2019. 2020, you're in a pandemic. The UFC is the world leader in MMA. I mean, obviously they were before, but they really made a push. Like, we had the conversation, is the UFC in the bracket of the NFL, the NBA? Are they nipping on the heels of the NHL? Like, are they really starting to make moves? Are we getting past boxing now? Like, MMA really took a big step forward. And it wasn't just MMA, it was the UFC. They took a huge step forward in 2020. So from a dollars and cents perspective, and I'd have to talk to friend of the show, Patrick Ogier, on this one, but Dana White's probably in the good graces of ABC, Disney. I mean, he had the one slip up with what, Tachi Palace, where they kind of had to rein him in a little bit. But other than that, I'd say he's in their good graces. And if you want to fight a war on piracy, I think if you're, you know, aligned with ABC, Disney, ESPN, you're probably in a good spot. So if you want to make that your big stand, I think they're going to be fully behind him. Maybe they won't say it publicly, but I think he's probably all right there. So I'd say he's probably in a good spot, like a really good spot.
You know, sometimes I talk about these unofficial degrees that we get in life, right? Like, if you know so much about something that you're like, man, this guy's got a master's degree in Disney movies, or this guy's got a master's degree in, you know, MMA, even though that's not his job, right? I have at least an associate's degree, maybe a bachelor's degree in mafia history. And this could not be what you saw coming. And Dana White kind of reminds me a little bit of John Gotti, in the sense that John Gotti, the Papa Bear.
John Travolta?
Yeah. He reminds me of John Gotti in the sense that when John Gotti first came to prominence in the mafia, they didn't like that he was out public. They didn't like some of the things he was saying. He was visible. He was bringing the mafia out into the light, and they liked to stay in the shadows. But the envelopes were thick, right? So everything was okay. And as long as the envelopes stayed thick, they would forgive some of the things that he would say. And I think that's kind of where Dana's at now. He knows that I need to sort of deliver on a certain number to continue to be Dana White. And if I want to go after streamers and talk shit on them, as long as behind the scenes I'm explaining to my bosses why I'm doing this, the general public doesn't need to know why I'm doing it necessarily. And he can get away with these things here and there. I'm sure that everything Dana White did was never 100% cool with the Fertittas, but when they sold the company for $4 billion, that damn sure was cool to him. So, and Dana was the one that sort of built that. So I think that he's probably in good standing. He's definitely in good standing with his business partners. He's definitely in good standing with the promotion. But, I think that he knows what he's doing. And I think that he's going to be able to leave the UFC when he wants to. We've asked this question in the past, and I continue to wonder it. What's the boxes that have to be checked? Like, what's left for him to do? You know, and it's one of those things where you look at it and say, sometimes guys retire because they're like, okay, what am I going to do? Come back and win another championship? Like LeBron, whether he admits it or not, is chasing Jordan. Brady just loves to play football, right? So he's going to keep playing. He's going to keep, you know, I think Brady early on, I've heard quarterbacks say this before, and I think someone said this to Tom Brady, and I've heard this quoted. They said, once you're done, you're done. There's no more playing football. So play it as long as you can, and as long as you can play it at a high level. And I think that that might be what motivates Dana. He just likes making deals. He likes making shit happen. I think, to be honest, he liked this pandemic. I mean, he wasn't rooting for us to have a pandemic, but he liked the challenge of a pandemic because he was running out of those types of challenges.
Yeah, and I mean, you get to gain such a massive leg up on everybody else in the process. So it only helped their business. So it's a weird situation. I'm definitely no mafia historian. There's Al Capone tunnels in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. Yeah, have you ever been there? Have you ever checked those out?
I haven't. That's what I need to get my bachelor's.
There's your bucket list. So, yeah, check out Moose Jaw, home of the Moose Jaw Warriors of the Western Hockey League. That's all I got.
All right, guys, there you have another episode of Early Stoppages in the Books. The fight has been stopped. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FNP. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty.
Let's get into it.